All right, so we're in a series. We've been in a series for a little while on our 12 words that are on this wheel. If you haven't been here for a while or just visiting this morning, this little wheel, ship's wheel that we've got back here is like the vision object that helps us stay on track here as a church. And each one of the spokes of that wheel has a different word on it, and each one of those words is printed on the front of your bulletin. If you have a bulletin, take a look at it, and all the way around the outside of it are the words of vision for our church. It's joyous and united, glorifying, accepting, transforming, accountable, loving, selfless, forgiving, devoted, expectant, and grounded in truth. And we've been in a series for the last several weeks of looking at each one of these words, taking a character out of the Bible, and trying to figure out which one of these words is best exemplified by this character in the Bible. And so we've been doing this for several weeks, and it's been actually kind of fun. I've enjoyed that series. But there's been one person at the end of the story of the person who has been able to guess or get the exact right word every time. It's been Don Hoag. All this entire series, he's been getting the right word after the story. And so I'm putting him to the test this morning. Don, what word are we doing today before we even hear the story? Wrong. All right. Whew, we finally got him. All right. So this morning's character, I don't know how to say this exactly. He's got a lot of baggage, okay? He's got a lot of baggage because he's in a family. He's in a very dysfunctional family. Does anyone else feel like they're kind of in a dysfunctional family? I mean, things are just messed up, all right? In a lot of ways. Yesterday I had the honor, but also the challenge of doing a funeral for a family member. It was my cousin's husband passed away. It was her second husband, and we had the funeral for her, or for him, yesterday, and which meant a lot of my family, my mom's side of the family, and stuff like that. Actually, even some of my dad's side of the family was at the funeral, and it made me realize how dysfunctional we really are. I mean, it's kind of strange to think everything's pretty normal and, you know, you got kind of a normal life, but then you get everybody together and it's like, man, we are a mess in so many different ways. I mean, not just my six brothers and sisters and that stuff. I mean, my extended family and cousins and all this other stuff. And we got to talking, and after I got done preaching, some of them came up to me and like told me what's going on in their lives because I haven't talked to them for so long, and showing me pictures and stuff. And I tell you what, I was just getting tired because I was like, oh my goodness, we are so dysfunctional in so many ways. And as bad as I see that, and I'm not saying that in a bad way, it's just kind of normal. The character that we're looking at today, he just comes from a very messed up world, is all I can say, because his name is Joseph, all right? His name is Joseph, and he's got 11 brothers, all right? He's got 11 brothers, and he's like not the youngest, but the next to the youngest, basically. And if it was just his 11 brothers, you'd say, well, that's not so bad. But he comes from even a more dysfunctional past even before that, because you have to see, okay, so God chose this guy named Abraham, all right? I'm going to give you some background. He chose a guy named Abraham to bring his blessing to the world. And Christ is eventually that blessing that we're talking about, even though they don't think so. They're thinking it's something else. But Jesus is really that blessing that finally comes into the world through the line of Abraham. Now, God could have chosen anyone. I don't think God chose Abraham just because he was a perfect guy or he had a perfect family or anything like that. He chose Abraham just because he had to choose somebody. And Abraham was a man of faith, and he chose Abraham. And you guys know the story of Abraham. If you don't, I'm going to try and give it to you in a very brief form here. So Abraham was married to Sarah. They had no kids. Finally, in their latest part of their years, they had a child. They named him what? Isaac. And so they had one son named Isaac. And then Isaac was kind of in the dysfunctional type of family himself, because he finally got a wife named, anyone remember? Rebecca. He had a wife, and they had two sons. They had two sons named Esau and Jacob, yes? And those two were like cat and dog, because they just fought all the time. And at the very beginning, The blessing was supposed to be on the youngest son because that's how God designed it, and there was a fight between them, and it was just a dysfunctional thing between those two brothers because Jacob stole Esau's blessing or birthright, and then he stole his blessing, and his mom helped him do this, and this is like, oh my goodness, what kind of a mom would help do that? And then they sent him away because Esau was mad and was going to kill Jacob. So, you know, they got that whole brotherly rivalry thing, and so Jacob takes off and runs away, and then he goes and he tries to get married himself. And he gets one wife that he really wasn't expecting. Then he gets a second wife. And then those two wives, it's her sisters. His two, that's a messed up thing. You know what I'm saying? You talk about messed up family. So he's got two wives and their sisters. And they have this jealousy rivalry thing going about having children. All right. So the one that he really loved, the one which is, oh, I can never remember all these names. Rachel, he really loved Rachel. And Leah, he doesn't, he's married to her, but he's not as thrilled with Leah. And so God says, you know what? I'm going to have a blessing on Leah. And so he gives Leah all these children. But Rachel, is it Rachel? Rachel, she doesn't have any children, so she's all upset. And she sees her sister having all these kids, and she's jealous of her sister. And so Rachel, this is so messed up. You think your family's messed up, right? So Rachel says, you know what? I'm not having any kids. So she gives her servant to her husband to sleep with, and she has children. And then it just gets into this big competition to have these kids. It's just a crazy thing because then Leah has kids, and then Rachel's servant has kids, and then Leah's servant has kids, and I'm thinking, Jacob, what are you doing? It's just a messed up thing. And so he's got all these kids, and finally Rachel has a child named Jacob. We're getting there, all right? Has this child named Joseph, excuse me. Too many J's and all these different things. Has this child named Joseph. The favorite wife, Rachel, has the favorite son, Joseph. And Jacob loves Joseph the most out of all the other sons and daughters, Dinah, that he has. And that's a messed up thing right there, too, because as soon as other sons and daughters and stuff like that see that mom and dad have a favorite, that's not a good thing. But he's done it, and he's made it pretty obvious that Joseph is his favorite son because he actually gives Joseph a special coat. The coat of many colors. Some of you may have heard about that. There's a whole stupid play about it and things like that. But anyway, so they give Joseph this special coat, and the other brothers are very jealous of Joseph because of the favoritism that their father gives to Joseph, all right? Whew, that's a lot of background story. You thought your families were messed up. Just wait till you hear the rest of this one. All right, so Joseph, as a young man, and all the favor that God or that his father has placed on him, does something really silly one day. He explains a dream that he has. If you have your Bibles, you might want to turn to Genesis chapter 37, because this is where this story gets started. Gets a little bit ramped up. It's already heated, but Joseph is about to put some fuel on the fire of the family dysfunction here, all right? So one day, Joseph, it says in chapter 37 of Genesis, it says, Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers and the son of Bilhah, the son of Zilpah, the father and wives. He brought their father, what am I saying? His father's wives, and this is a messed up thing, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than any of the other sons, because he had been born to him in his old age, and he made him in a richly ornamented robe for him. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him, and they could not speak a kind word of him. Youngest brother. Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him. It says that very right there. It says they hated him all the more. And he said to them, listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose up and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. His brother said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of this dream that he had. Now that was not a very wise move on Joseph's part, but he was 17. We got some 17-year-old men over here. Not a wise move. Don't do that. Don't do that, and especially don't do this. Because then he had another dream. He had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. I don't know if he thought he was going to justify himself or what was going on, but he says, "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father, as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and all your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. So if you go along with the story, and I'd love to, I probably should read all this to you, but I'm not going to read because it's a long story. I'm going to try and summarize some of this for you a little bit. So one day, all the other brothers were out tending the flocks, watching over the sheep, and Joseph, the favorite son, was still at home, of course, because the other guys were out working, he was at home. And his father says, "Go check on your brothers." So Joseph goes out to check on his brothers, and his brothers see him because he's wearing the coat of many colors, of course. Not a very wise move in itself. And they see him at a distance, and they say, "Here comes that brother we all hate. Does everyone hate him?" "Yes, we all hate him." They all took a vote, evidently. And they said, "Hey, we've got a great plan. Let's get rid of him. Let's get rid of the favorite son of our father." And so as they approached, they grabbed hold of Joseph, and they bound him. And one of the brothers says, "Hey, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in a well." And so like, "Yeah, that sounds like a really good idea. We won't kill him. We'll just throw him in the well and let nature take its course and let him die down in that well." So they throw him down in the well, bound him up, throw him down there. And then they see this caravan coming along. And being the good brothers that they are, they said, "You know what? We're not going to profit in any way if we just let him die down there. Let's sell him. Let's get some money out of our brother." So they drag him out of the well, and they sell him to this traveling caravan that's going by. So he's sold into slavery. I'm not even going to talk about Reuben that comes try and save him and stuff like that, but we're just not even going to talk about that part. So he gets sold into slavery. The caravan goes to Egypt, and he gets sold to a guy named Potiphar, Joseph does. He's sold to this guy named Potiphar. And Potiphar puts him in his house, and he's one of his servants in his house. And Joseph is blessed by God in amazing ways. And so everything that Joseph basically touched, he's kind of like Midas in some way, shape, or form. Everything he touched almost turns to gold because everything he's in charge of goes wonderfully. There is no problems whatsoever. It's like the greatest servant ever because everything he does is like perfect. And so Potiphar notices that and keeps putting him in charge of more and more in his household. And before long, he's in charge of everything in Potiphar's household. He's got charge of it. Basically, Potiphar wakes up, eats breakfast, sits back, eats bonbons, watches TV, and Joseph does all the work and makes sure everyone else is doing all their work. He's doing a great job. There's this one problem. Joseph is also a pretty good-looking guy. He's not only smart and very knowledgeable and very well-organized, but he's good-looking. And Potiphar's wife takes notice of Joseph. Whew, that's not a good thing. So Potiphar's wife says to Joseph, "Hey, good looking, come over here and sleep with me." And Joseph, I admire the guy. He's like, "No, I'm not going to do that." He says, "My master, your husband, has put me in charge of everything. He has not held anything back from me at all except for you." And he says, "And I'm not going to betray that trust in any way, shape, or form." He says, "No." And she gets upset about that, so she keeps looking for ways to trick Joseph to come to bed with her. One day, they're in the house, and she's doing her same little trick, spider to the fly type of thing, and he refuses, and he runs out of the room, and she starts screaming falsities, saying that he tried to attack her. And Potiphar gets all upset, believes his wife over rather than the servant, and he gets all upset, and he throws Joseph in jail. So he went from being a slave to getting to a high status, and then he goes from that high status right back to being down at the lowest status because he gets thrown in jail. And jail is not a good place to be at this point in time. It's not very nice. But once again, God blesses Joseph while he's in jail. And the jailer notices that everything that Joseph touches, even in the jail, comes to good. Everything is going good. So the jailer starts putting Joseph in charge of more and more things within the jail. And he rises to a fairly high status within the jail. This is a long story, isn't it? I could be reading it and be taking it even longer. So he's at a high status in the jail. And one day, there's two new inmates that come into the story. They are the cupbearer of the king. Cupbearer is a guy who, as I understand, the cupbearer's job is to drink, take a little sip of everything that the king is about to drink. Is this accurate? He's supposed to take a little sip of all the wine or all the drinks that the king is supposed to drink, just in case there's some guy out there who wants to kill the king and put some poison in there. So the cupbearer's got a really great job. He's like the lab rat, okay? He drinks everything before the king to make sure if he dies, the king's not going to drink. He's like, no, I think I'll pass on that drink. So the cupbearer and the baker, the head baker, are thrown into jail. We don't know exactly why, but they get thrown into jail. There's a point to all this. There really is. So Joseph, the cupbearer and the baker have a dream one night, and it's a disturbing dream, and Joseph is able to interpret the dreams for the cupbearer and the baker. The cupbearer's dream is kind of a good dream. He says to the cupbearer, hey, this is a great dream, man. You are going to be reinstated in 3 days, and the king is going to put you in a high place, and you're going to be back to your old glory. It's all good for you. And so he's like, awesome. And so he says, do me a favor. He says, when you get put back into your new old position, remember me and say kind words, and maybe the Pharaoh will let me out of this prison. He's like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. So 3 days, it happens. He gets put back into his old position. The baker hears that great report of his dream. It's like, hey, I'm going to give him my dream too. And it wasn't so good for the baker. Not good. So Joseph is thinking, man, I'm going to get out of this prison because the cupbearer knows I'm a good guy. He said he's going to speak up to me. It's all going to be good. But that doesn't happen. He sits in jail for quite a while longer until the Pharaoh has a dream. And finally, the cupbearer remembers his promise to Joseph. And so the Pharaoh brings Joseph to interpret the dream. Am I putting you all to sleep? Okay. It's like Days of Our Lives. You know what I'm saying? It's just one of those crazy dysfunctional things. Pharaoh finds out that Joseph has got great powers, great ability, great knowledge, great understanding, great organizational skills. Long story short, he puts Joseph in charge of all of Egypt eventually. I mean, Joseph is like number two in all of Egypt. You got Pharaoh and then you got Joseph, and he's in charge of everything. And one of the dreams that he interpreted was about this famine that was coming, about 7 years of plenty and then 7 years of famine that was going to be upon the land, okay? And so Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of the entire land. He says, you do whatever you say. No one's going to lift a finger without your word. So Joseph goes about collecting all the grain of all of Egypt for those 7 years of plenty. When everything is hunky-dory and everything's going great, he gathers all the grains from all the farms and he puts them in these huge storehouses. There's so much grain stored that they couldn't get even $3 for a bushel of beans at this point. No, there was so much grain, the warehouses could not hold it all. He had all this storage. And that's a great thing, because when the days of famine started, nobody had any food. Nobody was getting anything. And so here's where the story gets interesting. Remember those 11 brothers that threw him in the pit and sold him into slavery and hated him because of his coat and all these different things? See, they were part of that famine too. And they were dying because they didn't have any food. And they heard that there was food in Egypt, and Jacob sent his sons, thank you. It's been a long week. Sent his sons to go get food. And so the sons, having no idea, the 11 or 10 of the sons go to Egypt. They try to get some food, and Joseph immediately recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And he puts on all these airs and graces and calls them spies and says they're bad guys and they're trying to overthrow Egypt and all this other stuff. He's just messing with them. You know how little brothers do. When you finally got the upper hand, you got to mess with them a little bit. And he's saying all these different things about them. They're like, no, we're good guys. We have one dad and we got two other brothers. One's back home and the other one's dead. They're talking about Joseph. And he's like, okay. He says, this is what's going to happen. I don't believe you guys in any way, shape, or form. He says, one of you is going to stay here, and the rest of you are going to go back, and you're going to bring your younger brother. I'm going to see if you guys are honest. You're going to bring your younger brother back to me, this Benjamin guy you're talking about. You're going to bring him back, and I'm going to see him. Otherwise, you guys are not getting any more grain. Unless you come back with Benjamin, you get no more grain. So Simeon has to stay there in Egypt, and he sends the other nine back, and he does this really special little thing. It's really cool because they pay with silver for all the food that they're buying from Egypt, and Joseph, he's just a little rascal. You know, he's dysfunctional. He's spoiled. He tells the servant, he says, take all their silver that they take all the silver that they pay for the grain and put it back in their bags. So basically, they walk away with the grain and all their money, and they don't realize it. And when they finally discover it, they're like, oh my goodness, we are in so much trouble. As a matter of fact, they realize that they are in so much trouble that they recognize that the reason they're so much in trouble is because of what they did to their brother. They're actually making that equation. They're saying, man, God is going to smite us because what we did to Joseph way back then. They actually made that connection between the two, that they are in trouble, that this is why it's happening. It's a long story. They go back to their dad, and they tell their dad what happened. Their dad's like, oh my gosh, you guys are such idiots. Why did you do that? Why did you tell him about me, my youngest son, Benjamin? Why did you do this? There's no way we can go back. I'm not sending my son Benjamin back. There's no way. We're just going to leave Simeon there. He can rot in Egypt is basically kind of what he said. I'm thinking Simeon's like, what? I'm here all by myself. He says, we're going to forget about Simeon. I've already lost Joseph. Simeon's gone. Now I've only got you 10. And I don't even know if I like you guys. No, he didn't say that. So it goes on. And they get hungry again. And they have to go back to Egypt. And they're like, man, we don't want to go back to Egypt because now we got the money and we got the grain that we already ate. And we can't go back without Benjamin. And Jacob didn't want Benjamin to go back. He's like, man, this is not a good situation. And finally, Reuben steps up. He says, I'm taking full responsibility for this. He says, you know what? Send me back with Benjamin. If he doesn't come back, you can kill my two sons. You can kill your grandsons. Well, that's a great option, isn't it? That's literally what he said. He says, if I don't bring Benjamin back, you can kill my two sons. As a grandpa, I'm thinking, that doesn't sound real good either. But anyway, so that was the deal that Reuben was throwing out there. You can kill my two sons. He says, give me the silver that we paid for the original grain. Give me more silver. Send me back. I make sure we bring them all home. So finally, Jacob agrees. Sends them off. And Joseph gets there and he starts messing with them again. He still doesn't tell them who he is or what's going on. And he messes with them and he messes with them. And finally, he relents and lets them know because he sees Benjamin. It's actually his youngest brother, his little brother. And he just loves on Benjamin. He finally lets everyone know who he is and what's going on. The jig is up. He says, go back and get your dad. Bring the whole family. And they end up in Egypt, all right? So you got to think about this for just a little bit. You got a little younger brother, Joseph, who's been a little bit arrogant all along, even when he was little. You guys have a little brother like that? It's so funny because Daniel's going yes, and Jonathan's going no. Don't know what you're talking about. Nope. Benjamin is good. Where's Benjamin at? There he is. He's smiling. He's got a smile from ear to ear. Yeah. You know who the troublemaker is now. I'm just saying. That's all there is to it. All right. So you got a little bit of an arrogant younger brother. He's already kind of proved that he's kind of mischievous because he's kind of messed with his brothers and his whole family up to this point. And if you're one of the older brothers who threw him in the pit, you've got to be thinking, this is probably not going to bode well for us. This is not going to be good. Because this guy's in charge of all of Egypt. At any point in time, he can just like snap his fingers and we could see our heads rolling down the streets. They're pretty concerned about it. And they've lived in Egypt for a while and everything seems to be going good. Joseph seems to be treating everyone very well. But Jacob dies. Their dad dies. And the brothers are like, this is not good. You come to Genesis chapter 50. Verse 15. It says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, what if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrong things we did to him? You wouldn't do that, would you, Jonathan? Oh, my goodness. I know you guys couldn't see that in the back, but Jonathan went. Yeah. There's going to be a family discussion today. All right. Pays us back for all the wrongs we did to him. So they sent word to Joseph saying, here they go again, this dysfunctional family. Your father left us these instructions. They're lying. Okay, he didn't have it. Our father left us these instructions. Before he died, this is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs that they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of the servants of the God of your father. When their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him, which is part of the dream. We are your slaves, they said. Verse 19. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. And he reassured them and spoke kindly to them. What word are we talking about? Forgiving. You know, in all the dysfunctional families that we're living in, and I bet you there's several of them represented here today, the one word on the front of this bulletin that probably needs to be practiced more than any other is forgiving. It's the one that holds the greatest weight. Because Jesus said very plainly, he says, if you don't forgive those who have sinned against you, the Father in heaven can't forgive you. It reminds me of the words that Jesus said on the cross. What did he say? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. I'm going to keep this really simple. What face has come into your mind? What relationship has been circulating as you've been hearing that word? That's where it starts. And understand, the forgiveness that we hold back is not imprisoning that other person. It's imprisoning you. It's not about them. It's about freeing your heart, releasing you from the bondage that you've placed yourself in. Allowing his grace to flow through you. We're called to be a forgiving people. To be known by that forgiveness. I'm going to stop right there and let him do the rest of the work.